This recording is from the ACA World Convention that was held virtually in May of 2021. The ACA World Service Organization is grateful to all who contributed to making this convention happen, as well as to all who participated. ACA is an anonymous program. Please respect the anonymity of those that participated in the event. To learn more about the ACA Fellowship, please visit us online at adultchildren.org, where you can find information for newcomers, as well as free literature for download. Information about doing service in the ACA Fellowship can be found at acawso.org and acawsoec.org. To purchase literature or to make a Seventh Tradition contribution, please go to shop.adultchildren.org. We hope you enjoy the following recording from the 6th Annual World Convention, Global Recovery, in May 2021.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and a warm welcome to our ACA community all around the globe to our 6th Annual World Convention and our second fully online one. Woo-hoo. While the pandemic continues to be a challenging time for many of us, we see how events like this bringing us together, and for that we are grateful for our ACA recovery. This is the largest adult child meeting in the world, connecting our ACA members, our family of the heart, all around the planet, to heal together as one unified fellowship. This convention is being hosted by the ACA World Services Organization, and our theme this year is Global Recovery. This year, we have 27 sessions running over 30 hours around the clock and around the world. My name is Sue V. I am a grateful adult child. I am your moderator for this workshop, and I'm also the chair of Global Members. I live in Toronto, Canada, and this session is From Trauma to Healing to Thriving. Next slide. Anonymity. Please be sure to rename yourself in the participant screen to show only your first name, last name, initial, and country. Our co-hosts will help you with that if you need it. And it's fun when you do the country because we can see all the different members around the world. Please remember our spiritual principle of anonymity at this meeting at workshop. It's being broadcast around the world and also will be recorded on audio and distributed later. We therefore ask you to do not record any audio, video, or pictures of the AWC. We also ask that you don't share this link to this conference. Each member should request their own access to the AWC. This is so they can acknowledge our commitment to trying to protect the personal anonymity of AWC attendees. Next. We meet to share the experience we had as children growing up in an alcoholic or dysfunctional home. That experience infected us then, and it affects us today. By practicing the 12 steps, focusing on the solution, and accepting a higher power of our understanding, we find freedom from the effects of alcoholism and other family dysfunction. We identify with the problem and learn to live in the solution one day at a time. Please join me in opening our meeting with the ACA Serenity Prayer in whatever language or way calls your heart. Taking a deep breath now. God,
Mother Earth, grant me the serenity
to accept the people I cannot change, the courage to change the one I can, and the wisdom to know
that one is me.
Thank you. Next. I've asked Pamela to read the laundry list, and I'm going to do a handoff with Pamela now for the next two readings. And after she does that for our for Sue, once you see the red screen, you just stop share, and Pamela will start sharing after she's done the two readings. Thank you. Pamela, take it away.
Thank you so much, Sue. The laundry list. We became isolated and afraid of people and authority figures. We became approval seekers and lost our identity in the process. We are frightened of angry people and any personal criticism. We either become alcoholics, marry them, or both, or find another compulsive personality, such as a workaholic, to fulfill our sick abandonment needs. We live life from the viewpoint of victims, and we are attracted by that weakness in our love and friendship relationships. We have an overdeveloped sense of responsibility, and it is easier for us to be concerned with others rather than ourselves. This enables us to not look too closely at our own faults. We get guilt feelings when we stand up for ourselves instead of giving in to others. We become addicted to excitement. We confuse love and pity and tend to love pity. People we can pity and rescue. We have stuffed our feelings from our traumatic childhoods and have lost the ability to feel or express our feelings because it hurts so much. This is denial. We judge ourselves harshly and have a very low self-esteem. We are dependent personalities who are terrified of abandonment and will do anything to hold on to a relationship in order not to experience painful abandonment feelings, which we received from living with sick people who were never there emotionally for us. Alcoholism is a family disease, and we became para-alcoholics and took on the characteristics of that disease, even though we did not pick up the drink. Para-alcoholics are reactors rather than actors on life. Now for the hope. Ready? We move out of isolation and are not unrealistically afraid of other people, even authority figures. We do not depend on others to tell us who we are. We are not automatically frightened by angry people and no longer regard personal criticism as a threat. We do not have a compulsive need to recreate abandonment. We stop living life from the standpoint of victims, and we are not attracted by this trait in our important relationships. We do not use enabling as a way to avoid looking at our own shortcomings. We do not feel guilty when we stand up for ourselves. We avoid emotional intoxication and choose workable relationships instead of constant upset. We are able to distinguish love from pity and do not think rescuing people we pity is an act of love. We come out of denial about our traumatic childhoods and regain the ability to feel and express our emotions. We stop judging and condemning ourselves and discover a sense of self-worth. We grow in independence and are no longer terrified of abandonment. We have interdependent relationships with healthy people, not dependent relationships with people who are emotionally unavailable. The characteristics of alcoholism and para-alcoholism we have internalized are identified, acknowledged, and removed. We are actors, not reactors. Woohoo! I love that so much. Yes. And I'd like to take a moment and say thank you to Sue for putting that up. I appreciate your support. And to Suvi for for beginning the meeting. I want us to take a moment and remember the person who is still suffering. We are the lucky ones because we are here. There are so many people who are in pain. And maybe you're one of those people. I certainly have my own pain. Let's just take a moment. Send love and light out into the world for healing, kindness, truth, forgiveness, joy, and love. Thank you, everybody, for your patience and for being here with me today. The first thing I'm going to do is put up my PowerPoint and make sure you're all in the right place. This is a workshop about trauma. I am in South Korea. Good Sunday morning to you. And I found this series of photos and I just love them. It just feels like exactly how my life has been. I was frozen and had no emotions and so lost. And then all of a sudden I found program. I started taking care of myself. I started loving my inner child and really working hard. And now I have this really passionate, wonderful, joyful life. And I'm deeply honored to bring this workshop to you about a topic I think we don't talk enough about, which is how we move not just from trauma to healing, but then also to thriving and having an amazing life. So buckle up, my friends. I'm going to start with a personal story about my life. And I'm Pamela. I am an adult child. My mother died of alcoholism when I was very young. And my father died a few years ago, not exactly of alcoholism, but he had wet brain by the time he died. So I'm going to say it had a pretty big effect on him. When I was 18 years old, oh my goodness, I can't believe it. I'm like, breathe. This is my story. I don't often tell this story. So please be patient with me. It's a hard story to tell. When I was 18 years old, I went to visit my father after having lived in foster care for about half of my life. It was one of those really hot summer nights where your skin feels really sticky and the air is thick and it's hard to breathe. I remember that night I was wearing a yellow t-shirt and I was driving a white car that I had rented for the trip. And when my father saw me pull up, he came out of the house and he was drunk and he was wearing a hunting jacket. And in his hands was a rifle. He threatened to kill me that night. He said some really terrible things to me. Words that haunted me for many years. And I could feel the sweat on my arms and on my face and on my neck. But my mind went blank and I couldn't move. I just sat there with this man standing in front of me with a gun. I couldn't breathe. I tell you, my friends, that that was not the worst night of my life. It was the first time, though, that I'd been threatened as an adult. And it was the first time I became aware that there was something wrong, that this is not normal. This is really bad. So that's my story, or a bit of it. In this workshop, we're going to talk about some pretty heavy things. Trauma is a tough topic, and honestly, you might have some real reaction to it. So I want to give you total absolute permission. You don't need my permission, but we completely understand if you need to take a breath, if you need to step away for a moment. You are the captain of your ship. Please take care of you. Take care of your inner child. Do what you need to do. This is being recorded. You can always come back to it. And I know ACA has provided a space here during the workshop so folks can get some support. please use that. That's a wonderful gift that is being given to us. We're also closing the chat so that we can focus. And we want to focus on healing and safety first. We want you to be really prudent about what you share. I will be asking some questions throughout the workshop. You don't have to answer it in the Q&A. You don't have to speak it. You can write it. You can think it. But we want you to be safe. So, you know, don't share things that might be scary for like if someone else found out. I know that there have been people in our group that have been stalked and harmed. So we want everybody to be really careful. I also want to give a quick shout out for our wonderful ACA. Well, I'm calling them our ACA elves, Carrie and the two Sues, who are going to be helping me through this workshop. It won't all be serious, but let's face it, it's a workshop about trauma. So, you know, there's some heaviness involved. So big, deep breath. So let's start with you. I would like you to put in the chat, if you feel comfortable, one word that says trauma to you. What word comes to mind? Don't think too much, just what word comes to mind.
Pamela, just one moment. We're getting a little feedback with your mic, so maybe a little away from you.
Is this better?
Much better, yeah.
Okay, thank you so much, Sue. So let's see, trauma, the one word. Rape, abuse, secret, ouch, blood, drugs, alone, hospital. These are really heavy words, right? And they're words we don't want to talk about because they bring up shame. And shame is a killer. Shame destroys us. But when we read the flip side of the laundry list, one of the things that comes out is that we're not going to be in denial about our traumatic childhoods. I am not in denial about it. There were absolutely horrible things that happened to me. And because of that, I can bring that history here and support other people. I don't feel the shame anymore because I no longer keep it a secret. I am not silent about it. And I don't judge myself for it. I don't say I was bad. I was not bad. I was kind and loving and good. And in order for shame to live, it needs these three things. But there is a way to get rid of shame. There really is. And that is empathy. So one of the things that we'll talk about a little bit here is empathy. And that's interdependent relationships with healthy people. So hang in there. We're going to go through the difficult, but we're also getting to the joy. So here is our agenda today. We're going to talk about trauma and how it affects us, both short-term and long-term. We're going to talk about how to speak your truth and tell your story. And then I'm going to give you some techniques about healing and how to move toward happiness. And finally, we're going to talk about how to thrive and how to fly. So trauma is severe. We're not talking about, oh, I'm disappointed, I didn't get concert tickets. We're talking about severity. Trauma is psychological. It's also physical. It involves fear, usually fear that we may lose our lives or at least be severely harmed. It occurs also when we witness trauma. And there are lots of biological reasons for our responses. And I just want to tell you, today is not a deep dive. We're just going to kind of skim the surface of trauma. But I do want to tell you what happens when we have when we experience a traumatic event. And I call it the four B's, the brain, the breath, the body, and the buddies, buddies as in our support system and our relationships with other people. In the brain, what happens is, like in my story, I couldn't think, executive functioning shuts down. We lose the ability to do, like put things in order. Our emotions get and sensations get heightened. We have hormones that are released that are part of our danger warning system. So our breath then becomes shallow and faster, and we have difficulty breathing. The body responds by doing things like the blood goes to the torso, your muscles tense up, we get like real like tunnel vision, our mouth gets dry, digestion shuts down, you know, that feeling in your stomach, our heart rate increases, and our hands get kind of cold and clammy from the sweat. And we're basically in the fight, flight, fright response. And this is very normal and healthy response. This is your body saving your life. And it is a gift. It is a beautiful gift. The problem is that when we have it many times, it creates some other issues. And we'll talk about that in a moment. I think it's important to also mention that the long-term effects of trauma are things like people who are survivors of trauma have an increased risk of immune difficulties, lung cancer, diabetes, COPD, heart problems, liver disease, sleep disturbances. And this is true even when we take away the idea that, oh, you know, we're self-medicating with drugs and alcohol and food and all kinds of addictions. It still happens. Now, I want to warn you that this section right here, this is the most sciencey section. Beyond this, it's going to be less sciencey. So hang in there with me. The last thing I want to talk about a little bit are buddies, and that's our social relationships. And of course, we all know that trauma affects our social relationships. We really struggle with that. You know, we have a hard time being authentic because it doesn't feel safe, which creates problems with our relationships. If we can't be authentic, we can't bond with other people. So long-term relationships are affected. And one of the things we know about happiness from research is that relationships with other people, healthy relationships, is the number one most important factor in happiness. So it sounds pretty grim, doesn't it? Yeah, it's pretty grim. But there is hope. There's hope. And we're going to move into the hope part now. The hope part starts when we tell our story. You know, if you look at the steps, half of them, at least six of them, mention talking. We admitted we were powerless. We admitted, we asked, we made amends, we admitted, and we carry the message. It's all about speaking. You know, prayer and meditation, some people would say that is also speaking. Telling our story is deeply important. But who we tell the story to is also really important. When we work the steps, we find healthy ways to tell our story in meetings. We maybe journal, we talk to a sponsor or a fellow traveler. When we break the silence about our abuse and our mistreatment, we create a room in ourselves for healing. When we speak, the shame disappears. Now, I'm not saying it takes away, it happens immediately, because it doesn't. It takes time. But when we speak to somebody who has earned the right to hear our story and they give us back empathy and compassion and non-judgment, we are able to see a little more realistically how the trauma has affected us. It takes away a lot of our guilt and shame. And this is the reason that we then say we avoid emotional intoxication and choose workable relationships instead of constant upset. That's healing. Telling our story in healthy relationships is a big part of healing. So what I'd like you to do is take a moment now and look at your life. Who are the people in your life that you can trust with your story? Who is someone who has proven they've earned the right to hear your story? Now, there will be some people who don't have a person, that they're in the beginning stages of recovery and they're not quite there yet. It's like, oh my goodness, you know, I'm not sure if I trust these people. I don't know. Wonderful, wonderful. You are in the process of healing and you're figuring out who you feel safe with. That's beautiful. So we have best friends, we have sponsors, we have clergy people, lots of different people. Oh, therapists, lots of people we can share our truth with. But not everybody. Be careful who you share your truth with. So speaking, beyond speaking, there are lots of other things we can do that help heal us and bring us to happiness. And so I would like to talk about that a little bit. The good news about this, what I think is really amazing, is that science has found that people who have pain and difficulties or trauma when we are children, when we're young, when we become older, we have a greater capacity for joy. We have more joy, it's more frequent, and it's deeper. And this is not a new idea. The wonderful Sufi poet Khalil Gibran said it, 100 years ago. The deeper that sorrow carves into your being, the more joy you can contain. And I find that so hopeful, and that gives me purpose. And I think it's really beautiful. So there's even more good news. In research around happiness, there's a lot of it, and I study happiness. What scientists have found is about half of our happiness is biological. We kind of have a set point of how happy we are. And you know that. You know people who are like, woohoo, joy, joy, happy, happy. And then there are people who are always Eeyore. About half of that is biological. But here's the amazing thing. Somewhere between 40 and 50% of our happiness is voluntary. It's about how we choose to live our lives, how we look at a situation, choosing to be authentic, choosing forgiveness, choosing celebration and creativity, choosing to be kind to ourselves. Now, there is, that part where like, oh, but my life, about 10% is life circumstances. You know, if you're someone who has schizophrenia and you don't have access to medication, that is certainly going to impact your level of happiness if you're in the midst of a psychotic break. Absolutely. But I want to focus on this part here, the 40% that is about choice. It's amazing. It's brilliant. It's you. It's you making the choice. All you. It's you can do it. And I think that bears repeating. Almost half of our happiness is how we manage our lives. So let's talk about that. Like, what does that mean exactly? So there are several things that create healing in our lives, and we need the healing in order to get to the happiness. And once we get to the happiness, then we can get to the thriving. And here's how we do it. We do these amazing things that I have listed here on the PowerPoint. We tell our story. We interact creatively in life. We take care of ourselves by being gentle, healing our inner child. We create healthy relationships. We take care of our bodies. We forgive others and ourselves. We make amends. And we change the patterns of our lives. And I'm going to tell you, it's not a quick fix. It's not easy. It takes courage to break the cycle and to make different choices, but it's really worth it. Really worth it. I have the most amazing life, and I want you to have an amazing life too. Now, when I talk to people about this, they're like, well, you know what? I just say, yeah, everything's good. Everything's beautiful. Everything's wonderful. Well, no, that's toxic positivity. And you know, those people that are toxic around their positivity. Oh yeah, my aunt is dying of lung cancer, but it's okay. I'm okay. And my cat is ripping the wallpaper off the wall, but it's okay. Life's good. Everything's fine. No, I'm fine. I'm fine. I'm fine. That's toxic positivity. And that is not happiness. That's lying. And what we need is authenticity, and we need to find the good within the difficult, and we need to acknowledge the difficult. This can be a challenge. You know, when I said my aunt is dying. She is dying. And that is horrible and painful. And I love her deeply. And she's the healthiest person in my family. And she's wonderful. And she's dying. And that is deeply sad. And I'm grieving about that. So I'm not pretending that pain doesn't exist, because it does. In the meantime, though, I'm talking to her every week, and she's telling me stories, and she's feeling loved and appreciated, and I'm connecting with her on a deeper level, and I'm appreciating her. And so I'm having this really sad experience, but I'm also finding the joy within it. So that's what we're talking about as far as positivity, not toxic positivity. Okay. We want to be authentic, but we also want to find the joy even in the difficult things. So one of the things that I do, and I know a lot of times people do, in order to deal with the difficulties, is we write about them. We write in our journals. People are always like, write about it. My sponsor is always telling me, you need to write about it, Pamela, please write about it. Read a book, write about it. And these are wonderful things to do, and they're important things to do. And they help me heal my trauma. But there's more. I have a secret. I have the secret to it, and I'm going to share it with you. So let's take a breath. Now think back when you were a child. Think about that. How did you express yourself creatively? Don't think too hard. Just what did you do? And if you feel comfortable, write about it in our Q&A. When you were a child, in what ways were you creative? Was it painting? Was it coloring? Did you like to put on like little plays with puppets? Did you dance or play a musical instrument? That thing that appealed to you as a child is something you might want to explore again. And here's why. When we allow ourselves to be creative, we are changing our brain patterns. And this is brought out in MRIs. Our brain patterns get changed. It connects, creativity connects the right and left sides of our brains. And remember, when we have trauma, like a part of our brain shuts down, creativity helps bring those two sides together. And it helps us retrain our brain. And there's a lot of research on this. It's also a really great way to tell your story. I mean, if you like to do puppets, you know, doing a little puppet show about telling your story is amazing. You know, psychologists use that kind of technique all the time because it works. So, I lost my train of thought for a moment. One of the things that we are promised in the ACA program is we will learn to play and have fun. And creativity is one of those ways. We act fun, we have fun, we act silly, we have a good time, and we stop judging ourselves through our creativity. So try it, even if you feel silly and you're like, oh, I'm not very good at it. Of course you're not good at it. Of course you're not. You haven't done it in a long time or you've never done it. You're allowed to grow and learn. You're allowed to be absolutely terrible at playing guitar. You don't get good unless you practice. And we don't practice if we don't have the courage to try it and to not judge ourselves. Another way we can heal is through self-soothing exercises. And I was having a chat recently with someone who said to me, when I had children, I realized when they were upset, you know, I would hold them and rub their back and wipe away their tears. And I soothed them. And it never occurred to me to soothe myself. Well, I want it to occur to you to soothe yourself. So I'm going to teach you a couple of self-soothing techniques right now. And they are rooted in the same soothing that we would do for a child. We would wipe away their tears. So healing touch is really powerful. So right now, I want you to put your pens down, have your hands free, and just touch your face a little bit. Maybe smooth down your hair. Be kind to yourself. I always keep some lotion nearby in case I need a little self-soothing, and I will put lotion on. Sometimes I put lotion on my hands or sometimes on my face. It's a gentle way to self-soothe. Another way you can do it is by taking your hands and placing them on your heart and just being gentle there with yourself. You can take a little pillow or a doll and hold it against you. Maybe your pet. You can hold it against you. And if it's something like you're out in the world and you're with people, maybe you don't want to carry around a teddy bear. So a lot of cultures, a lot of religions have a history of having kind of magical talismans or things to help us pray. So rosaries, prayer beads, that's very common. Worry stones, the Guatemalan worry dolls. A lot of people I know in program will carry their chips with them and they'll keep them in their pocket. And when they're struggling, they just hold it the way we would a worry stone and it supports them. So some self-soothing exercises are around touch. And that's one of the ways that we heal. We also have to heal the body and kind of do a do-over So in our trauma, we have these physical experiences. It becomes very visceral. And I think you've probably heard the term get back on the horse. So when you have a car accident, you get back in the car, and even though you're shaking, you try to drive. And that's actually borne out in research. You want to have a safe kind of do-over. So for, you know, when I've talked to people who've been survivors of domestic violence, a lot of times they'll take self-defense classes, martial arts classes. It gives them an opportunity for the brain to kind of rewire. And it shows us that we are safe. We can be safe. If you're someone who has dealt with a lot of verbal abuse, you know, learning nonverbal communication, learning some safe ways of fighting, doing therapy, learning how to yell no. These are all important ways of retraining your brain. So what happens is, because we have this kind of hyper-vigilant, like, oh my God, what's going on? You know, for years I sat with my back to the wall so I could see the whole room. But once we move out of that, we can retrain ourselves that the world can be safe. And then our natural fear instinct, which is such a gift, can be used in normal circumstances when we are like actually in danger. Now, forgiveness, big important part of happiness, forgiving others, forgiving ourselves. But quite honestly, forgiveness is one of those topics that we could use, you know, hours and hours to talk about. So I'm just going to mention that because it involves our emotions, our behaviors, and our thoughts, it's very complex. There's a reason there are several steps that are about forgiveness. And it's why we do a 10th step every night, so that we don't get overwhelmed with what's going on. This is how we heal. We make the choice regularly to forgive others and to forgive ourselves. We have one of our steps is that we seek through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with our higher power. And, you know, I work with a lot of people who are atheists or agnostics, and they're like, yeah, I'm not doing that prayer thing. Yeah, no, not doing that. I'm totally okay with that. You know, whatever works for you to bring you to whatever your higher power is. My higher power is love, love in all its forms. That's my higher power. So meditation is a pretty important part of that healing process. So meditation and mindfulness is pretty, well, let's talk about how it works. Survivors of trauma have a very different experience about meditation. So meditation is one of those, like, you know, empty your mind, be at peace, close your eyes. And quite honestly, survivors of trauma have a very different response to that kind of meditation. And what happens is, we will close our eyes, we will empty our minds, and then we get these flashbacks and horrible memories. And so what is recommended is, instead of emptying your mind in meditation, that instead, you know what, let's do some other types of mindfulness practices, like some movement, like Tai Chi or yoga or martial arts. We can also do things like a mindful walk in nature and taking pictures of the leaves and the flowers and the insects. This can be very meditative. There are certainly kind of like culturally diverse ways of being meditative. And one of the things I think about living here in Korea is there's this beautiful tea ceremony, which is all about being mindful and meditative. And I'm involved currently in writing meditation, which is all about mindfulness. It's divine feminine meditation. So find ways that work for you. You might not have interest in that. And you're like, no, I want to do the sit still and like, empty your mind thing. So instead of that, I want to suggest we do a guided meditation. And I'd like to do one right now with you. So here is how meditation can work better for people who have been traumatized. So sit up in your chair, as straight as is comfortable, and take a couple of breaths. You might find it helpful to close your eyes during this. In your mind, see yourself walking by the ocean. You see the waves, and you hear the surf crashing against some rocks. The sun is high, and you can feel it warm on your skin. There's a slight breeze. And when you look up, you see a bird flying past. It opens its beak and drops a gift at your feet. Pick up the gift. You see a small card. It is from a trusted loved one. What color is the paper? What color is the ribbon? How does the ribbon feel between your fingers? Pull it open. And you see the gift that you've received from your loved one. Hold it to your body. And look up to the bird. If you have a hand free, raise it in thanks and greeting to the bird as it flies off. Send thoughts of gratitude to your loved one. And when you're ready, flutter your eyes open and come back to the room. Healing takes time, but it's possible. The last part of our workshop before our question and answer session, the last part is to talk about thriving. At some point, you'll realize that by working the steps, caring for yourself, learning to play and have healthy relationships, you're going to realize one day how very healed you are. You'll be like, oh, hey, that's one of the promises. Hey, that happened. And when that happens, it's a beautiful moment. In that moment, you realize you are more than what happened to you. You are more than your trauma. You'll see on the screen here some artwork that I made specifically for when I talk about trauma with people. This shows Jung's archetypes. And it's a reminder to all of us that inside of us, We're the rebel. We're the healer. We're the lover and the orphan and the wanderer, the artist. And yeah, we're also the survivor of trauma. But if you look at this, the trauma piece is just one amongst many. And that day happens. And that day happens when we have dealt with our toxic people, and we've set good boundaries, and we are having kind of a like a peaceful, pretty peaceful life. But we want more. So how do we get that more? Well, we make small steps a little at a time. We're not being dramatic. We're just making changes. This is that time in our lives when we've handled all that, like, you know, the bombs that go off in the beginning of our recovery. At this point, we're just living our lives. And if you start on a particular trajectory and you make a small change over time, it takes you somewhere else. It's really amazing. One of the things that I do, and a lot of people I know do, are 30-day challenges. We have these in our program, you know, 30 meetings in 30 days. I took that idea and I integrated it into my real life. So every now and then that's not true. All the time, I do 30-day challenges. And I told you about the Divine Feminine Writing Meditation Group that I'm doing. That I'm in the middle of a 30-day challenge with that one. Here's how a 30-day challenge works. You choose something. You're going to do it every single day for 30 days. This is one of the ways we can build self-esteem and we can have integrity and perseverance and grit, which are all parts of happiness. So you make a small change, you do it for 30 days, maybe about 10 minutes a day, and then see what happens. So I am challenging you, to create a 30-day challenge for yourself. It needs to be measurable and it needs to be realistic. You can't fly to the moon at the end of 30 days. But you can read, you know, 2 pages in a book every day, or you can exercise for 10 minutes a day, or you can clean your house and put 15 things away before you go to sleep every night. Don't go crazy. Don't make it big and dramatic, just small changes. So one of the things that helps is to give people, to give yourself a little reminder, like on your phone, you can set an alarm. And what would you like to do? How would you like to change your life? I strongly, strongly suggest that it be something fun, something kind of playful, and it's only 10 minutes. You can have a cup of tea alone for 10 minutes, maybe play ball with your kids for 10 minutes, dance to some hip hop music, write a letter, something simple, but 10 minutes and fun. That's how we change our lives. Yeah, I do want to tell you about a friend of mine who did a 30-day challenge that he hated. He absolutely hated it. He decided he would go jogging for 20 minutes a day. And within a week, he realized he hated it. He had the right equipment. He took good care of his body. He had the right shoes and all that. It was a safe place to do it. He just didn't like it. He was like, oh, this sucks. But he did it for 30 days. He finished it, and that helped his self-esteem. And he got the information of what he's not. He's not a jogger. And that's important information. But he maintained the perseverance, which is really powerful. The next 30-day challenge he did was learning how to salsa dance. And he found out that he loved salsa dancing. So this is about exploring and trying new things, growing our perseverance, growing our grit, having integrity. And these are all part of thriving and being who we truly are. Now, that is basically the end of my my talk about trauma. I do have one more thing I want to tell you. If you do a 30-day challenge, this is my promise to you. If you do a 30-day challenge and make a small change in your life for the next 30 days, send me an email. Here's my email address on the screen here, workshoppamela@gmail.com. If you send me information about your 30-day challenge and that you did it, I will send you a certificate of completion that says you did it. Okay? That's my promise to you. Also, you can feel free to send me a note on Gmail if you have questions or concerns that you don't want to bring up in the workshop. Absolutely welcome. And I want to end my part before we get to the question and answer is this piece. I want to tell you, this was one of my 30-day challenges, was making a piece of artwork every day. And this is one of mine. Be kind whenever possible. And I'm going to add, especially to yourself. And it is always possible. Thank you, my friends. And I'm open to questions and answers. I see there are several in here. There is a question. I said nonverbal communication, and maybe I meant nonviolent communication. I actually meant both. So thank you for pointing that out. Let's see. Thank you, Liam. The slides are available for download. I did make a couple of minor changes, but generally it's the same. The main difference in meditation is when we close our minds, like when we like empty our minds. The problem with people who have survived trauma is that flashbacks come in. So it helps for people who have PTSD symptoms, instead of emptying our minds, to fill it with something else, whether it's a walk in nature or some sort of body movement like Tai Chi, or do something like a guided meditation where we think about something. So thanks for that. Let's see. The question about shame, just take a look at the slides on the website. My pleasure. Can you speak about when relationships and friendships change as a result of recovery, how some unhealthy friendships fall off, and how to stay focused on staying healthy, thriving, and moving to healthy relationships versus forcing them with unhealthy ones? That's really a great, great question. I'm going to tell you the truth. Sometimes we lose our friendships. Sometimes we lose family members because they're toxic and they can't deal with the changes we are making. And in the short term, that's incredibly painful. And what I have found is when relationships like that end, I try to take a moment, well, more than a moment, I take some time, and I find gratitude. I find the gratitude for what I received from that relationship. And I find the joy from it. And no one can take that away from me. And someone said to me once, relationships come to us for a reason, for a season, for a lifetime. When we try to hold the season people for a lifetime, it makes things more difficult and more painful. So letting go, kind of releasing people into the wild, is part of healing. That's how it works. Let's see. How do I deal with tumultuous emotions when I have set a healthy boundary? Yeah. I'm going to say this is where creativity comes in. Can you draw it? Can you paint it? What color is your anger? What color is this feeling? What does it look like? Maybe do some writing meditation where you use your non-dominant hand to see what happens. It's hard, and it means that you are healing yourself. You're taking care of yourself, and that's beautiful. And be patient. It isn't sexy and it isn't exciting, but it's the truth. It takes time. And send love to the other person and to yourself. Do I think the physical effects of trauma to the brain can be improved through trauma work? Yes, I do think the physical effects of trauma to the brain can be improved through trauma work. Yes, I do believe that. And science shows that. And if you would like some resources on that, please send me an email and I'm happy to share that with you. Thriving in business when executive functions are slow. When executive function is slow. Well, executive function slows down during the trauma. So this is when we need to take care of ourselves and focus focus on healing and doing what we can. And you know what? Sometimes balance means I'm really crappy at my job for a little while and then I get better. You know, we've all had that happen to us where we've done the best we can and then, you know, it's not fabulous. We do the best we can and we're gentle with ourselves about it. Let's see. Oh, the slides. What three things are needed for shame to grow? Let me go back to the slide because that question has come up several times. It's secrecy, silence. Where's my shame slide? Where is my shame slide? Sorry, it's taking me a minute. Oh, secrecy, silence, and judgment. I can't believe I couldn't remember that. You asked me too fast. That's what my grandma used to say. You asked me too fast. Secrecy, silence, and judgment. Can you talk about the importance of sharing with people who can listen instead of going into fixing or shaming? Okay, so when you choose the person that you're going to talk to about it, my best friend and I, we have this thing we say, I don't need you to fix it. I just want you to listen. This is what I need. And I tell her flat out, this is what I need. And she says, okay. And that's what she gives me. And that's it. So when you know what you need, you can ask for it. And you want to be with people who can give that to you. There's another question about how to ignore loved ones when they're acting toxic. Ooh, yeah, that's a hard one, isn't it? Quite honestly, people, places, and things. Stay away from toxic people when you can. Stay away from places where toxic people hang out. Don't do the thing where people are toxic. You know, I have a friend that I'm perfectly okay with, except for when we start playing games. She's incredibly competitive. So I maintain my friendship with her, but I don't play games with her because she gets vicious. I might get a little vicious sometimes too in response, and I don't like that about myself. I don't want to be vicious. So I stay out of that position as best I can. What do you say to a person that continues to use the word should when talking to you? You know, I consider it a real gift when people let me know who they are. And I make the choice then to not tell them the deep things. I don't let people should on me This is about creating healthy relationships. And you might want to look at that relationship and decide, do I want to go deeper in this relationship? And if it's somebody that loves you and really wants you to feel comfortable and safe, they'll listen to you. When you say, hey, when you tell me I should do something, it really, really hurts me. It really hurts. And I need you to not do that. I'm happy to hear what your experience is, but don't tell me what to do. Okay. I'd like to get a time check with Sue, if I may. Can you help me with knowing?
You've got about 17, 18 minutes.
Oh, lots of time.
So it takes us about 5 minutes to close. So you've got, like, say, let's say 15 easy. And if you want to take some live questions, we definitely have some people with their hands up as well. So you can go.
Oh, back okay. And forth.
Just let us know how you want us to handle it. Your tech team is here to support you.
I appreciate that. I would like to put, I see several people have asked for my email address. And so I'm putting it in the chat for folks.
Yeah, no worries. Keep putting it in for you, Pamela.
Oh, okay. And I'm grabbing my cup of coffee because my throat is hurting a little bit. So, okay. I'm happy to answer. I will tell you, I'm a little bit nervous about folks asking a question and I'm afraid I'm going to look stupid, but you know what? I'll do the best I can and that's all I can do. So
that would be lovely, Pamela.
Let's
ask Carrie. Carrie, can you unmute Tammy S?
Oh, sure thing. Okay, Tammy, you should be able to talk now. Go ahead and ask your question.
Thank you.
Tammy, we're not hearing you, but you're unmuted on.
How do I handle triggers?
There you go, I think.
I'm an adult. Hello.
And I think we'll keep the questions to, because there's a lot of hands here, we'll keep the question to a minute. And then, about a minute. And then Pamela, you can answer within the minute type thing. And we'll take as many as we can. Go for it.
Tammy, I'm sorry, your audio cut out. Can you repeat your question, please?
Yes, can I be heard?
Yes, we can hear you now.
Campbell, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, you're cutting out a little bit.
Oh, it is? Okay.
We can hear you now.
Hello?
I want to make a suggestion to you, Tammy, since we're struggling a little bit. Could you put your
question in the... Can I be heard?
Okay, go ahead. Let's try it.
Okay. Handling abandonment issues from an abusive mom with abandonment regarding choosing travelers and sponsors for the trauma triggers.
Okay.
How to handle.
How do you handle the pain of abandonment? Is that what you're asking me?
Yes, and the fear of abuse by others, other women, especially since the abuser was my mom.
Okay, gotcha. It's a fair question. You know, we are triggered. We are. It happens. And so we want people to prove that they are worthy of us. And we want to prove that we are worthy of them. So I don't think that we should necessarily, like, you know, give people tests, but it is prudent to let people show themselves. So I'm going to share my truth with somebody, a small truth, see how they handle that. Are they judgmental? Do they tell me I'm stupid? Do they walk away from me? So we learn by working the steps and practicing this in our daily lives to trust people a little bit. And then when they prove that's okay, you trust them a little bit more. And then you trust them a little bit more and you follow that process. So the thing is, it's to have courage. Watch people. You're in the meeting. What kind of person is this? And you know, when you're in the meeting, you know, wow, that person's got some amazing recovery. Let me try to talk to that person. And that's who you approach. I hope that helps. Can you tell me who the next person is?
Up next, there is Callie C. Callie, you should be able to unmute yourself now if you'd like to ask your question.
About that, what is the best way to shut down unsolicited advice? Mm. Like, I'm having trauma responses. Yep. Yeah. To the unsolicited advice. It's driving me crazy.
Yeah.
Any tips?
Yeah. Okay, so I'm going to be very real with you. In some circumstances, it's appropriate to tell people to F off. I have certainly told people to F off, you know, appropriately though, like a stranger on the subway, you know, told me to do something. I was like, who are you? F off. But, you know, I'm not going to say that to my boss. I'm going to say, thank you for your feedback. I really appreciate it. Let me see what I can do. And then if we find that we are continually with someone who is giving us this kind of feedback, we want to reevaluate the relationship. Is this what I want? And maybe it's somebody that you love very much. So you bring it to them and you say, hey, this thing is getting in the way between me and you and our relationship. And I love you and I want to see how we can fix it. And then see what happens. And if the, you know, I got to tell you, I did that with somebody that I loved deeply, probably the most important person in my life, who said to me, what's wrong with you? Why are you being crazy? And I had to reevaluate that relationship, say, I can't get what I need from this relationship in this way. So I don't go there for that thing. I don't go to Home Depot. I don't go to the hardware store to get a gallon of milk. I just don't. So that's my suggestion.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure. I hope it helped. Who can I talk to next? Oh, this is so exciting for me. Woo!
It's fun, like a radio show. Up next, Denise, you should be able to unmute yourself now if you wanted to ask your question.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes. Yep.
Okay, perfect. It's actually not a question. I'm a very complimentary type of person, and I just wanted to compliment Pamela. I'm in my house. I live alone. I've been unemployed for 6 months. I joined ACA, and I joined ACA because I self-sabotage at my jobs. And then family stuff too, right? And so now I found a job. I'm feeling very confident that I cannot self-sabotage for the first time in 30 years of working full-time, right? 30 years long of this. But I wanted to compliment you and tell you that I literally love your face. You have very soft features. Your voice was soothing. You actually got me to meditate, which I'm a little high strung and can't, like by myself on my own, I can't do it. But with your voice, I was able to meditate. So thank you for that.
Thank you for your feedback, Denise. I'm delighted. Keep coming back. It works. It works if you work it.
And I'm going to email you because you're someone I feel very safe with and I admire you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. I do want to bring up a point. I want to answer a question that I see in the Q&A that has several people have asked something similar, which is about what to do when resistance and doubt comes up or you feel stuck when we're doing something. Yep. It happens, and I'm going to tell you, for me, it happens right around the 2-week mark. I'm like, oh, I don't want to do this 30-day challenge anymore. And that's why I keep it at 10 minutes. I can do anything for 10 minutes. And sometimes I have a friend do it with me. I was doing a bicycle challenge about a year ago, and I called my friend in America, and I said, I really want to ride my bike. She's like, I tell you what, I'll go for a walk with you while you ride your bike. So we Zoomed while I was on my bike, you know, no video, want to be safe. And she walked. And so I had somebody helping me through that kind of that hump. So ask for support. That's what I would say. Ask for support. Another question that came up, which I think is really important to bring up. And I apologize for not bringing it up. And thank you, Lori, for asking this. What trauma is okay to share in an ACA meeting? I'm going to say, trust your gut. And when you look around the room, do you know the people? I'm not going to tell people about being raped if I'm in a room and it's mostly dudes. I mean, that's my thing. I'm just not going to do it. I'm going to go to an all women's meeting. I'm going to talk to women that I feel are trustworthy, that have shown me that they are trustworthy. And that's who I'm going to talk to. I don't think you necessarily have to talk about your trauma in a meeting. Telling your story doesn't mean you tell it to strangers. Telling your story means you tell it to someone that deserves to hear it. So I'm going to say, find a trustworthy person to talk to. As far as sharing your trauma in an ACA meeting, let's face it, the world can be a crappy place and there can be mean people, and you don't want to bring your gentle, soft spirit into a place where it can be hurt. That's not taking care of your inner child. Sometimes we have to kind of put that aside and say, you know what? I'm going to be the adult here and I'm going to shut it down and I'm going to wait after the meeting. There is that woman that I really trust, that I really like, or that guy that I feel really safe with, and I'll talk to that person. So thank you for bringing that up. So there's a question about long-term physical effects regarding high cortisol and hyperventilation. That is a really, really specific question, and I'm going to ask you to send me an email. I'm happy to share resources about that, okay? So can we bring in another person with a speaking question?
Melissa G is up next in the list. Go ahead, Melissa.
Hi there. Yay, it's my turn. Hi. Thank you so much for your qualification. I really appreciate that. So I have, it's a two-part question. One was, long time ago in therapy, I was given this physical mannerism to maybe how to offset anger. And that was like the chopping of the axe, like maybe on your bed, like just throw your arms out, like you're chopping an axe to like, you know, yeah, like throw it all out of you in a way in order to focus in on that. And at the time I thought like, this is stupid. I'm not doing this. And then, so did I get results? No, because I didn't do it. But the second part, but later in life, when I was more open to the courage of my conviction to get well and to channel a healing modality, I was able to do that and did get results. But secondly, what do you think about the idea where there's these different types of focus to like empower oneself, like go to the shooting range, you know, and go and focus on your target and, you know, claim back, like, you know, following like direction is from that, you
Melissa,
know.
I want to interrupt you because we only have a little bit of time and I want to answer your question. Is that okay? All right. Yeah. So your question is very similar to one that's in the Q&A, which is, if I understand it correctly, is about how to handle the trauma and like the physical piece of it, like, is it okay to kind of revisit it and, you know, do these kind of violent things that may have been done to us? And it is a complex answer. Honestly, it's incredibly empowering when we're ready for it. If someone has just come out of a domestic violence situation, there are a whole lot of things to handle right then. And buying a gun and shooting it is probably not a good idea at that point. There needs to be some healing and some clarification and like kind of getting solid in ourselves. However, this does go back to kind of retraining your brain and having a do-over. And the question here is about also about revisiting the trauma. Yeah, when we're ready for it, there are amazing, wonderful ways to do that. Even if it's just in our minds, you know, EMDR therapy, you know, in our minds revisits the trauma and helps us heal, helps bring both sides of the brain into it. And we do some healing there. We can also do things like self-defense classes. There are some wonderful model mugging types of classes where you're physically in a situation where a guy actually grabs you and picks you up. And it's like, oh my God. And you deal with the fear reaction and you learn how to fight through it and you retrain your brain and your body in ways to handle it. Should you go in and just like be violent? No, there's absolutely a process, but it's okay to retrain our bodies and our brains. There's also, I saw another question that I wanted to answer. Oh, somebody asked, how long did it take me to get to where I am? Woo, I worked so hard. I cannot tell you how hard I worked. I had a very, very violent childhood and it was, I still have PTSD, you know, 45 years later, I still have them. I still have, things happening, but I make a choice every day to love myself. And some days what that love means is I lay on the couch and I binge watch Netflix. Most days that means I express myself. I go to a meeting. I say, oh, there's this part of me that I find that's kind of broken or a little twisted or something. Let me look at that. I talked about the divine feminine writing. I am really embracing my power as a woman. That's important to me at this point. So I found a way to do that. When I was having a lot of physical issues, I took self-defense classes. I started taking some martial arts and I was ready. And so how long did it take me? I think I'm not there yet. Every single day for years, I did something that scared me, whether that was wearing socks that didn't match or eating dinner for breakfast. They were like, I broke all the rules, like little rules. And that was probably my first 30-day challenge. And I just stumbled across it. I did something that scared me every single day. And that changed my life. That really changed my life. So I think we're close to a point where we need to close out the meeting.
Yeah.
So I would like to, before we do that, and thank you, Sue, for keeping me on track and all of the my wonderful elves who have been just such a gift. For all the people who are here who are participants, I just want you to know I have goosebumps. I have goosebumps from all your kindness and your care. And I want to thank you for trusting me. You've asked some really hard questions. And that tells me that you found me to be trustworthy to ask those questions. And I appreciate that. I want to take about 5 seconds for us to just self-soothe, whether it's on our face, touching our hands to our chest, holding our teddy bear. Take a breath. You deserve love. You deserve kindness. You deserve joy. Sometimes we don't have people in our lives who can bring us these things. We must be that person. And when we live in our truth and our kindness and our appreciation, we attract others in the same way. I wish you great peace and I wish you love. And we end all of my workshops the same way. Everybody raise both your hands. One hand is like this. This means peace. Your other hand, your middle two fingers come down. This means love. So if you ever see me out and about, hey, Pamela, peace and love. So everybody say it to me, peace and love.
Peace and love. Hey, Carrie, can you unmute everybody very quickly and they can say peace and love?
Oh, that would be so great. Just, and ready.
Then we peace do have to close. But let's everybody do what Pamela's asking us to do.
Oh, yay. So both hands are up. One hand is like this. It means peace. Your other hand, your middle two fingers come down. And peace and love.
Peace and love.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye. Well,
no, thank you. We're not going yet. We're going to close
off. Oh, I'm sorry.
You've got a couple more little things left.
I got more work to do.
I want to say thank you to Pamela. And also, this is the beginning of many conversations, I'm sure, to come, many workshops to come. Sue, can you bring up the PowerPoint for us as we finish off? And Pamela, your work is still not done, but I'll continue for a minute. Volunteering for service. Service in ACA is a recovery tool that strengthens your program. You can help carry the message and make a difference to another ACA member's life by signing up as a volunteer. There's service in global members, if that's of interest to you, in the countries in Asia, Africa, Oceania, Australia, New Zealand, India, everywhere. And there's also service in areas of WSO, fantastic services. So check out what they are and just check these websites. And I'll ask Carrie if she could just put those the web links into the chat line. And as Pamela has been saying to us, and as I've been saying in other workshops, service is an ACA recovery goal. And we just get more and more ACA recovery when we give like this. And thank you, Pamela, for showing us the way there. Next slide. Seventh tradition. Our seventh tradition states every ACA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. We ask that you consider making a seventh tradition contribution at adultchildren.org, seventh tradition. Carrie will put that in the chat as well. You'll find a variety of ways that you can make your contribution. We're delighted to announce new functionality and more options have been added to this new seventh tradition link. So you can now donate in your local currency in a variety of ways, such as credit card, PayPal, Venmo, Diners Club, Google, and Apple Pay. And for many of you to know that if you're interested in supporting South Korea and other countries for literature, we have a literature scholarship fund for our meeting groups to try and help them in their fledgling meetings as they're starting up. And South Korea wants to start an English speaking meeting, Pamela. I just got a note today. We'll be talking offline. So you'll go to the seventh tradition and you'll see literature scholarship and it'll be there. And also just whatever you can give. And if not, that's okay too. Next. I've asked Pamela to lead us with the promises. Would you like to do that, Pamela?
I will. I love the promises so much. The promises of ACA. We will discover our real identities by loving and accepting ourselves. Our self-esteem will increase as we give ourselves approval on a daily basis. Fear of authority figures and the need to people please will leave us. Our ability to share intimacy will grow inside us. As we face our abandonment issues, we will be attracted by strengths and become more tolerant of weaknesses. We will enjoy feeling stable, peaceful, and financially secure. We will learn how to play and have fun in our lives. We will choose to love people who can love and be responsible for themselves. Healthy boundaries and limits will become easier for us to set. Fears of failures and success will leave us as we intuitively make healthier choices. With help from our ACA support group, we will slowly release our dysfunctional behaviors. Gradually, with our higher power's help, we learn to expect the best and get it.
Thank you, Pamela. Next slide. Please check the acawso.org website information about the recordings. This everything is audio recorded. Give us a few weeks. We'll get it together. We'll have it loaded on the website and you can see the link. And if Carrie could add that on our chat line so that you have it. And also with South Korea, I want to make sure that it's English speaking and Korean speaking. Just want to make sure that we have that. The next two sessions in this particular green room, the next one coming up will be Discovering Your Inner Teenager. Wow. And that is from our Bonnie, who's one of the lead authors for Loving Parent Guidebook, which is going to be coming out hopefully end of July, early August. And alongside at the same time, we also have ACA recovery support from healing to helping. So if anyone has a need for extra support after this workshop, please go there. They're a great bunch of people and they're going to be talking about how we heal together. And if anyone needs one-on-one support after this workshop, if something's come up, as often does with us when we're going through things, just let them know. They're there for you and they will help you. So lots of support. If you want to check on the schedule, just go to www.acaworldconvention.org. We'll put that in the chat line again as well for all of the wonderful workshops. We're going around the world, around the clock. We're going to keep going till 2 p.m. Eastern time on Sunday. So try and get some sleep. Do some self-care, do some soothing, and it's a wonderful weekend. And thank you, Pamela, for everything.
Thank you for making it so easy. Thanks, yeah. Everybody.
You're welcome.
You did awesome, sauce-some. And you're the awesome in the awesome sauce.